I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is John Schlipp. John is the intellectual property librarian and associate professor of library services at the Frank Steely Library here at Northern Kentucky University. You know, a lot of small businesses, particularly startups, spend a lot of time putting together their business plan, their marketing plan, maybe their human resources. But a lot of times they forget about the intellectual property aspects of that. What is intellectual property and what should they be concerned with?
Well, first off, for a definition, I like to remind people that it is not smart property, but when applied to creative works, it could be considered a return on the investment to protect one's intellectual property. And in businesses, that's very important because there's everything from copyright of business flyers and promotional material to trademark of the name or the branding of the company, or for patents for any of the products that there may be inventions from the company itself.
In our business, on the tax side, there's been a lot of people trying to patent, there's a lot of controversy over that, trying to patent tax planning ideas.
Oh, and that kind of sounds like the controversy about patenting business software and business processes, too.
Yeah, how can you patent a tax planning idea? That just, I wish you could, because we've had a few of them ourselves, haven't we?
You would think that's something that's common knowledge.
Yes. Or if somebody did enough research or just thought about it in a different way, but can you?
Professional knowledge. In some cases, you could. If it's something very, very unique and something that is a one of a kind, and I guess the best example would be like Amazon.com and their one-click feature that they have on there. That is something that was patented, believe it or not.
But there are some things that are not patentable. And what would some of those types of things be?
Speaking of things that aren't patentable, there are other types of intellectual properties, though. So if something is not patentable, again, it could be something that could be copyrighted, because copyright has to do with the expression of the creative works that people would produce.
On Thursday, December the 5th, you're having the grand opening, the official Patent and Trademark Research Center here at the Steely Library. Maybe you can share why that's such an important date.
Well, Steely Library also has an Intellectual Property Awareness Center that we've been running for the last year or so, and this is an excellent supplement to that because now we can provide the resources from the Patent and Trademark Office to help independent inventors, small businesses, and entrepreneurs.
And what kind of resources?
Well, those resources include databases for searching for patents and trademarks, because if you have a patent, it has to be something that's unique and never patented before. And we have the resources that only these few libraries, 80-some libraries in the country have, which is the same resources the patent examiners use at the Patent Office in Washington, D.C.
So you can do your research here on campus at Northern Kentucky University to even see if somebody else has already patented that famous idea that you think you just thought up.
Precisely. However, I must speak in promotion and defense of our attorney friends, because just like with accountants, they're there for a reason and they're very important. We provide more of the background for a preliminary search. So that way that inventor would be prepared. They would know if there's a viable market, number one, from doing some other business research, and if this is unique and has not been patented before. And if they're comfortable with that, then they could go to the professional attorney or agent that represents the patent office.
If folks want to learn more about the grand opening, how can they get that information?
Yes, they can contact us at Steely Library, and then also they can go to our website, which is ipac.nku.edu.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is John Schlipp. He is an intellectual property librarian and associate professor of library services at the Frank Steely Library here on the campus of Northern Kentucky University. And John, I know this coming Thursday is a big day for you. It's the grand opening of the Patent and Trademark Resource Center here at Steely Library. What do people need to know about that, and why should someone attend?
Well, it's a great event because not only does it help educate and inform people about the basics of intellectual property, which is great for inventors, entrepreneurs, businesses, etc., we will have expert representatives from the patent office who will be here to train people so they can learn how to do a patent or trademark search.
You're a business owner out there and you think that you've invented something or you have some secret, we call it your secret sauce. How do you know when you should get it patented or trademarked or copyrighted?
Well, that's one of the things our Intellectual Property Awareness Center at Steele Library helps the general public with. We give them some background and point to resources that will help them provide some background information. We also try to remind them to be very careful and confidential with who they speak with. And we, of course, don't disclose anything as well as professionals at the university. But we will provide them the resources to learn what to use. And the resources from the Patent Trademark Office will be very helpful, especially for a business that needs a trademark or for an inventor or business that would like to patent their idea.
You know, it's somewhat confusing to me, and I'm sure to many other people, is this whole conversation about a patent versus a trademark versus a copyright. How do you distinguish between them in layman's terms?
Well, let's go ahead and use a great example. We're all familiar with the popular board game Monopoly. Well, Monopoly had all three intellectual properties associated with it. First off, there was a patent for the process of the game itself, and that patent was granted back in the middle of the Great Depression in the 1930s. Since then, the patent has fallen into the public domain, and now you see all these other Opoly-type games. But the instructions for the Monopoly game are copyrighted. And then the trademarks for the name of the game and some of the visual images have been trademarked by the producer of the Monopoly game.
So is that why, for instance, if I go to a local bookstore, I can get Cincinnatiopoly?
Correct.
And then the properties will be not Park Avenue.
No.
They'll be Erie Avenue or something like that. That's why they do it, to get around those rules?
Because the patent has fallen in the public domain, but although trademark is still enforced on that product, they have to change things, and the game rules might have to change a little bit as well because the game rules were copyrighted.
In your seminar on Thursday, you're going to actually be talking about all different types of things. Maybe you can just briefly summarize one or two hot topics that people should know about.
First off, there will be a great overview of patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. There are other types of intellectual properties too, such as trade secrets, licensing, and things of that nature. Then we'll have all kinds of sessions for patent searching and trademark searching and how to use the unique databases that the patent office provides. And then we will have an expert panel at the end of the day after our ribbon cutting, where we'll have partners that we work with in the community and on campuses, such as Chase Law and Informatics Institute, the NKU Incubator, which is known as
UpTech.
UpTech, thank you. And also the Small Business Development Center and the Inventors Council of Cincinnati.
And this is free. All this is free.
Correct.
And you don't have to have, you don't have to be a true quote-unquote inventor,
no.
Right? I mean, this is a pretty broad category
Very
of people
broad.
Who should be considering these kinds of services, musicians to inventors.
That's right. From inventors to musicians, as I always like to say, and also small businesses and even nonprofit organizations. You'd be surprised how many nonprofit organizations need copyright or trademark for some of their business they do, even in the nonprofit world. And to learn more about the program, we suggest you go to our website, which is IPAC, spelled I-P like Papa, A-C, .nku.edu.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, it's hard to believe that 2013 is almost come to an end. And with that will also be lost opportunity for those folks that haven't taken the time to do year-end tax planning. This year, there are many changes that people are going to be faced with that they may not realize because the rules changed on January 1st, 2013. And for many people, those rules changed for the worse.
True. There's higher tax rates, partly as a result of the January 1st tax bill, partly as a result of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, which added a new level of tax for upper income taxpayers.
Also, there's a new, actually a recurrence of an issue that had been actually on hold for a while, and that is that itemized deductions previously were pretty much unlimited. Now, itemized deductions are going to be limited again based on your adjusted gross income. So again, those deductions, even though it's not a tax increase, if you don't get to deduct as many expenses, it's a tax increase in disguise.
Then effectively, if you're in the highest tax bracket, whereas in 2012, that bracket may have been 35%, federally, your marginal tax rate now might be close to 45%.
And many of those taxes are not being accounted for or withheld against your payroll if you're a W-2 employee. So the key is you have to take some action now. And I know it's not fun, it's the holidays, but it would really be in your best interest to do a projection of your income, both you and your spouse, because those salaries get added together when you compute your federal taxable income.
You should do a projection, and if it turns out that you're going to have more tax liability than you want, and you own a business, for example, there are some steps you can take to reduce your income. One of those steps is one of the anomalies in the tax law, which on the one hand, you can get a tax credit if you buy, you know, an energy-efficient hybrid vehicle, for instance. But you get an extreme tax benefit if you buy a super heavy, more than 6,000-pound SUV. In fact, you know, normally when you buy an SUV, you can only deduct a few thousand dollars in depreciation. But under the current tax law, you can take a 179 deduction for $25,000. This is all assuming it's business use. And then you can take a 50% bonus depreciation on the remaining cost. So if you get a $65,000 heavy-duty luxurious SUV, you can end up with a tax deduction of $45,000 or $50,000.
The curious thing is that that may be eligible if you buy that vehicle before December 31st or on December 31st, but come January 1st, that option may be gone because that rule is set to expire. And think about that as you go into the final days of this year, the final weeks of this year. If you're looking at a couple of different vehicles, knowing that you may get a huge tax deduction, which effectively helps pay for the cost of the vehicle, you may want to think about altering your choice or making a different decision.
Or accelerating the purchase, because if you purchase that same vehicle in 2014, your deduction is only about $11,000. So it's a dramatic decrease based on the current tax law.
It sure is. If you are a business owner and you operate your business as an S corporation or a LLC partnership or even as a sole proprietor, don't forget to include your business income on your personal tax return, because even though you may not have actually taken a distribution or taken the money out of the business, because it's a pass-through entity, you will pay tax on that income at the highest marginal rate. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. There are many things that people should be doing this time of year as it relates to reducing their tax bill come next April. And some of that really depends on what their tax bracket is in 2013 versus 2014.
And the only way you can determine that is to do a projection of what your income and your tax liability is going to be for 2013 based on things stand now. And maybe also looking at the categories of deductible expenses you have. For instance, do you have enough medical expenses to be able to deduct those? If you do, then you want to try to bunch as many of those as you can into 2013 because you may not be over the limit in 2014.
Yes, and remember that limit's changed for people who are under 65 years old. You have to have medical expenses that exceed out-of-pocket expenses in excess of 10% of your adjusted gross income. That's a change from last year. The threshold last year was only 7.5%, and certainly that 10% threshold is not there for seniors in 2013. So as you mentioned, if you have had some medical issues that weren't covered by insurance and you may need to have more medical treatment, if you can go ahead and schedule that, get that done in 2013, it may allow you to take those deductions. Whereas if you wait until next year, no deduction if you're not over the threshold.
Another reason to do a projection is to determine whether you're in that dreaded alternative minimum tax or not. If you are in alternative minimum tax, that means your top tax bracket is 26 or 28%. So any incremental income you have is taxed at that rate. So you may even want to increase income to the extent possible into this year.
That's right. You can actually get income into 2013, for example, such as a bonus that you wouldn't otherwise be paid for until next year. If you can accelerate that into 2013, you may be able to permanently save tax on that. Now, alternatively, if you are going to be subject to the alternative minimum tax in 2013, but you're not projected to be in that situation in 2014, you may want to defer or postpone certain types of deductions that don't help you a bit, such as taxes.
For instance, state income taxes, if you make estimated payments, city income taxes, property taxes. The reverse of that is also true if you are in the regular tax bracket and not in AMT. You may want to accelerate those types of payments. For instance, in Ohio, your real estate tax bill is normally due at the end of January, but that's really for the first part of 2013. So you can actually prepay that amount in December and get a deduction this year as long as you're not in alternative minimum tax.
The other thing that you may want to really think about right now is take a hard look at your investments, what you've realized in terms of capital gains and capital losses. If you've got more gains than losses, but you have some losses sitting out there, that it may make sense to go ahead and accelerate those losses, take the loss in 2013 to offset your capital gain. Same thing if with the capital losses. If you have losses, you may want to accelerate some gains to minimize the cost of those capital gains, because in 2013, certain taxpayers in higher income brackets will have to pay an additional 3.8% on capital gains.
You know, if you're over 70 and a half and you have an IRA, you are normally required to take minimum distributions from that IRA based on your life expectancy. In 2013, you can actually make a charitable contribution directly from your IRA to a charity, and that reduces the amount of your required minimum distribution. That provision is scheduled to expire at the end of this year, so it won't be available next year.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Todd Henry. Todd is the founder of a company called The Accidental Creative. He's also an author of a book called Die Empty and The Accidental Creative, which is a book, the second book that you've written, Todd. And some of the topics that you talk about are things that we hear from our clients and other business professionals all the time, but they have this fear of whether it be failure, whether it be people telling them no. You have a whole line of thinking about fear and how to approach that.
I do. Well, fear is going to be present anytime there's uncertainty. You know, most of us experience fear in the face of uncertainty. And I have a friend, Thad Cockrell, a musician, who says, our job every day as creatives is to walk into dark rooms and turn the light on. That's our only job, is to just walk into a dark room and turn the light on. But most of us want to stay where the light already is. And the reason we do this is because we're biologically hardwired to prevent uncertainty in our life. Because, you know, in past ages, uncertainty meant we were going to get eaten by something larger or whatever, right? And so I think sometimes we feel that same sense of terror and fear when we're doing any kind of work that involves uncertainty. There's a guy named Neil Fiore who does research into procrastination, and he asks, why do people procrastinate? What are some of the common forces? And he'll often do this experiment with his clients where he'll take them into a room and he'll put a 10-foot wood plank on the floor, you know, 6 inches wide, 10 feet long, and he'll ask them, could you walk the length of that plank? And they look at him like it's a trick question. What do you mean? Of course I could walk the length of the plank. It's just a wood plank on the floor. And I'll say, well, now imagine I take that plank and I suspend it 100 feet in the air between two buildings. Now could you walk the length of that plank? And they look at him like he's crazy. What do you mean? No way. It's 100 foot in the air wood plank. No way am I going to walk across it. Well, what is changed about the technical skill required to walk the plank? Absolutely nothing. If you could do it on the ground, you could do it in the air. What's changed are the perceived consequences of failure, which in this case is plummeting to your death. But I would submit to you that many of us go through our days artificially escalating planks, artificially escalating the perceived consequences of failure. And as a result, we never act. Even in small ways, we never act on our ideas, on our instincts, because we have so escalated these perceived consequences of failure that it paralyzes us.
Do you agree with that fear is something that you can actually, the more you do a particular task, it becomes less fearful?
That's exactly right. Fear turns something innocuous into something terrifying. And so the more we talk about fear, and especially within organizations, the more we talk about the actual consequences of failure, which are often very different from our perceived consequences of failure, and we talk about worst case scenarios, we talk about the actual risks involved in a specific course of action, the more fear tends to dissipate. But the more we just let it stew in the darkness, the worse it gets and the more paralyzing it can become. And so I always tell people, listen, your job is to take small risks every day to push yourself in the direction of your fear. Notice your fear and move directly toward it, because as we do that, the fear tends to dissipate and we begin to understand true consequences versus the ones that we just conjure up in our imagination.
So when you advise people, when you coach people or help businesses accomplish these types of tasks and really take themselves to the next level, how do you do that very practically? Do you actually set up opportunities for them to face fear and let them practice
for the most part, these little daily risks that we take are taken in a lot of cases are taken individually by people who are choosing a specific course of action that may not comply with the direction the company has traditionally gone, or it may challenge an existing assumption within the marketplace. It may be, you know, a new product, a new idea, a new message that they're wanting to pursue. And so the real difficulty here is that we often don't know what is risky to one person may be easy to another person. What's easy to someone may be infinitely risky to someone else.
If people are interested in reaching out to you, learning more about you and your work and your books, where can they find that information?
You can find me at toddhenry.com. You can find my books anywhere books are sold.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Todd Henry. Todd is the founder of Accidental Creative, which is a company that helps teams be prolific, brilliant, and healthy. You're also the author, Todd, of two books, Die Empty and The Accidental Creative. You're an international speaker. How would you describe the book, and why should somebody pick it up? What could they learn from it?
The most important thing I want people to recognize is that every single day and in every single decision that you make, you are building a body of work today. You're contributing to the sum total of value that you will contribute on this earth, which is the very definition of work. We tend to think work is our job. It's not just our job. Our work is any place we add value in our life. And we have four levers that we pull in order to do that. And there are four finite resources. Focus, which is how we define the work that we do. We have a finite amount of attention. All of us know that, right? A finite amount of attention we can spend. Our assets, our financial resources, our relational resources. So focus, assets, time. We each have 168 hours a week at our disposal. And energy. So focus, assets, time, energy is how you bring yourself to your work. It does you no good to dedicate time to something if you don't have the energy to actually do it well, to bring yourself to it. It's a finite resource that you have. So I always tell people, your fate determines your fate. Your focus, your assets, your time, your energy will ultimately determine that body of work that you build. And so if we do nothing else every day but sit down and ask, where is my focus going today? Where are my assets going today? Where am I going to put my time and where am I going to put my energy? That will help you stay aligned and make sure you're building your body of work around something that you care about. Because at the end of your life, you're going to point to that sum total of value you've created. And you're going to ask yourself, does that represent me or did I live somebody else's life?
Because the book title, Die Empty, is all about that, isn't it? Doing all of your best work while you're alive.
That's exactly right. And, you know, unfortunately, that's a thought that a lot of people don't have until very close to the end. But unfortunately, a lot of people look back on their life and they say, I regret that I didn't follow my intuition. I regret that I didn't take more small risks. I regret that I let fear paralyze me, that I took the comfortable path. I regret that ego got in the way and caused me to become inflexible.
We started this country as a lot of entrepreneurs, and then it just seems like as a society, we've become a society that have abandoned some of those traits. Why do you think that is?
First of all, I think that we're seeing a resurgence of entrepreneurship. I think technology is helping us experience a resurgence of entrepreneurship, which is, I think, a wonderful thing. But I mean, frankly, I think it's the easier path to settle. It's the easier path to compromise. And I think that for a large number of people, it's easier to settle and to jump into something that's known than to deal with the uncertainty and what's on the other side of uncertainty. And the reason people don't take strategic risk often and launch a business or pursue an intuition is because they want to know what's on the other side of that uncertainty, which is a luxury that we never have as creatives, as entrepreneurs, as business builders. We never know for sure that there's going to be a return on our effort. And so we'd rather go for the sure thing than risk spending our finite resources and not getting a return. But that is exactly what we have to do if we want to contribute the kind of value we're capable of.
And your books, Die Empty and The Accidental Creative, can help guide people, bring these kinds of thoughts into their mind, help people overcome some of those fears and uncertainty so that they can actually take their selves and their companies to the next level. Todd, thank you so much for being my guest and for that great advice. And again, if folks would like to find you, your website is
toddhenry.com.
And your books can be found anywhere books are sold.
Anywhere books are sold.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. We're delighted to have as our guest today Ohio Senate President Keith Faber. Senator Faber, before being in the Senate, he was actually in the House of Representatives. And Senator Faber, you've been on the job for now about, what, 10 months?
10, 11 months.
And you've accomplished quite a great deal, not only now, but in the Senate as well as in the House. But one of the big accomplishments that I want to talk about today is something that was done in a very bipartisan fashion. And recently, yourself in the Senate and your House of Representatives, along with the governor, actually came up with a very bipartisan bill.
Well, ultimately, what we did was pass a resolution calling for Congress to pass a balanced budget amendment. You know, 49 of the 50 states are required by state constitutions to balance their budgets. This is in an era where the U.S. Congress hasn't passed a budget in over 5 years. Our concern is that with an ever-escalating debt, we need Congress to live within its means, just like all the states have to live within their means.
Not only have they not passed a balanced budget, they haven't even passed any budget. Is that correct?
It's one thing to pass a budget that's out of balance. That's bad enough. But not passing any budgets is even worse.
Why is that such a difficult concept for our federal government to grasp?
Well, it's a lot easier to say yes to people than it is to say no. And if you're in an environment where you can spend without limitation, you're going to spend without limitation. And that leads us to the circumstance where we have now nearly $17 trillion in debt. That debt alone is going to start being its own limitation. But the real question is more of a moral question. Is it fair for us to pass on almost limitless debt to our children and grandchildren at a time when we should be acting more responsible and living within our means? But one of the big questions, again, with regard to the balanced budget is, as the federal government lives within its means, it's probably going to require concessions on the state on operating within federal dollars. But that's good. That's called governing. When you make a decision as to what you're going to spend and what priorities you're going to invest in first, you make better decisions when you're taking in the full ramifications of all the consequences.
And, Senator, you have been successful in agreeing on many bipartisan, you've gotten a lot of consensus on many things. How do you do that?
Well, unlike the federal government, over 80% of all the legislation that passes the Ohio Senate is done in a bipartisan fashion. And that's despite the fact that we have a supermajority of Republicans in the Senate. One, I would tell you it happens because we know each other in the state legislature. The other, it happens because most of the things we do in the state legislature are things that generally are related to things that are important in our districts. And that's the same around the state. And so we just tend to get better agreement. Now, we're going to have partisan bills, whether it's a budget or whether it's an election bill. Those kind of things tend to be partisan. That still happens. But the reality is almost everything we do in state legislatures, not just in Ohio, but around the country, are done generally in a bipartisan fashion.
Don't you think it makes a difference that as a state legislature, you're typically in Columbus maybe 2 or 3 days a week, but you're back in your district the rest of the time. And so you are actually listening to your voters.
You know, the states are the laboratories of democracy. The federal government would do well to emulate us, not have us emulate them. And it's making a difference. In Ohio, if you just look at the successes we're starting to have by governing, it does make a difference. We had an 18% reduction in state spending to balance our budget, to get rid of an $8.5 billion structural imbalance. That wasn't easy. But we had to do it because our state constitution required us to do it. And Ohio is now better. We're having growth in jobs because of that.
If folks listening today would like to learn more about you, learn more about some of your initiatives, and even get weekly updates, how can they do that?
You can contact me at faber@ohiosenate.gov. And if you want to sign up for our weekly video updates, you can go out and sign up on the sign-up site at ohiosenategop.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Senator Keith Faber. Senator Faber is the president of the Ohio Senate. Recently, in the last few months, as part of the current budget for the state of Ohio, you passed a piece of legislation included in the budget, which is near and dear to my heart, and that's tax relief for small businesses. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that and really why that legislation managed to get through.
One of the things we took real pride in this budget was passing what has been one of the largest tax cuts anywhere in the country. We took a 10% across the board tax cut for all Ohioans and for small business folks, those folks who get their revenue in the form of an LLC or a partnership or a sole proprietor. We gave them a 50% reduction in their Ohio income tax for the first $250,000 of income. Net, that's $3.4 billion more Ohioans get to keep in their pockets from income taxes. Net that out with some other tax changes we made, it's a net $2.7 billion tax cut for all Ohioans.
Then initially that got cut out of the House piece of the legislation. And thank you very much, Senator, for making sure that got in there, because we work with many of those small business companies that do pay tax. Their business income is taxed on their personal level. And I don't understand, and I never understood, why the largest corporations in our state pay not one dime of income tax, but our smallest businesses, who are supposed to be the job creators, are paying tax on business income. So this, I think it was wonderful that we have that $250,000 exemption. Do you see that expanding even more?
Sure. The number one goal we have to grow and make our economy stronger to create jobs is to make sure we can empower small businesses to be successful in Ohio. And so all of those listening out there who are thinking about growing and expanding their business, Ohio's open for business. Certainly, income taxes are a major drawback on people's incentives to grow and be prosperous. And so we're trying to lower the income tax structure, make it streamlined and more efficient, and certainly how we treat businesses are part of that. Small businesses still make up 70% of the jobs are created in small businesses in Ohio. We're going to grow and strengthen those in any way we can.
Are you seeing a pickup in the amount of businesses being started and are moving to Ohio?
Absolutely. We had our record number of new business filings in Ohio. Last year was the highest in a year on record.
What other kinds of provisions? Is there anything else out there that you can see coming down the pike?
Well, again, we're trying to move towards consumption taxes and away from income taxes. We know consumption taxes are generally preferable from a concept of income taxes deter people from savings and investment. And it's that revenue that you can use to grow and create jobs. Certainly, nobody likes to pay taxes, but we all need government services that are essential. So the two things Ohio's been doing is trying to rein in and focus on what we spend on in government to make sure we're only paying for those priorities so that we can lower our overall spending. You know, just 3 years ago, Ohio had an $8 billion structural imbalance. We solved that $8 billion structural imbalance not only with not raising taxes, but by being more fiscally prudent. Fast forward 3 years, and we have the ability to give a $3.4 billion income tax cut. Our rainy day fund, which had 84 cents in it, that's the state savings account, now has $1.4 billion in it. By being good stewards of state tax dollars and trying to wean ourselves away from the federal money, we've been able to be more fiscally prudent, and it's starting to show up in our ability to do things like tax cuts.
Folks would like to get in touch with you, reach out to you, be kept abreast of what's going on. How can they do that?
The best way to reach me is at faber@ohiosenate.gov. And if you'd like to get our weekly video updates, they're 1 to 5 minutes long, you can sign up for those at ohiosenategop.org.
Thank you for being our guest, Senator Faber, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jamie Humes. Jamie is the Vice President of Great Traditions Land and Development Company. And Jamie, you were also recognized as a 2013 Women of Influence by Lead Magazine. You have quite the resume for such a young professional. Let's talk about that. Tell us about Great Traditions.
Great Traditions is a residential real estate development company. We were founded in 1978, so we are now 35 years old. We build lifestyle-oriented master plan communities. We have developed over 4,000 acres, 5,000 home sites, and 35 communities.
And some very well-known home sites.
We originally did Wetherington Golf and Country Club in Westchester, also Legendary Run in Pierce Township, currently the Village at Stetson Square, which has been a really great transition into the urban marketplace. Also, Reserve of Montgomery, Carriage Trails in Indian Hill. The list goes on.
You mentioned Stetson Square, and that
yes.
seems to be a trend now of more people going more towards urban living. Do you see more projects like that in your future?
Yeah, I think we certainly hope to. We're always looking. And as you can see, the trend of urbanization is alive and well. And I think that's also representative of the millennial generation, Generation Y, which is emerging. And their housing needs, whether it's for sale or rental, they're coming on strong. They're 80 million strong.
Isn't it also aging baby boomers who are becoming
aging,
empty nesters?
Yes, absolutely.
Don't look at us, but yes, we are kind of there.
And that is one of our primary target markets as well with Great Traditions. And we also have, for Stetson Project, we have focused on the urban environment. But traditionally, we have also focused on the emerging baby boomer and empty nesters. There is a demand for housing, downsizing, not necessarily in quality and style, but a downsizing and simplification. The walkability and pedestrian friendliness, to borrow an industry term, is key and crucial. People like to walk. It's healthy. It breeds connectivity. And that's a key feature in all of our communities. without the walkability, you aren't going to have that.
Why do you think that we're seeing that trend?
I don't know why it is new, because it just seems like it should have always been. And maybe just because I'm so exposed to it on a daily basis. But the walkability, and I think it's the connectivity that people want to interact together, mm-hmm. and providing the spaces. And I think land planners and the municipalities are seeing that need to provide good public spaces for other, for people to gather in.
So are you feeling like housing, that people are willing to step out and take risks and buy homes? Are you seeing that whole marketplace come back alive?
I think there's some really strong signs of life. Just today, I read in the newspaper, it's the 28th consecutive month of year-over-year sales increase. So that's a really strong move. It's been a humbling time the last 5 years, and I think we've all experienced that to one degree or another. I think the industry, the real estate industry, is on the bounce back. It has been hard. It has been slow, but things are definitely looking up. For those who have remained, it's been a true survival story.
What are some of the current projects that you're working on at Great Traditions?
One of our key projects right now is the Vintage Club of Montgomery. It is right in between Gate of Heaven Cemetery and Harper's Point, north off of I-275. It is 63-acre community, three distinct neighborhoods. We've got smaller home designs for, you know, as we were talking, the empty nester buyer. And then we also have the estate home sites for larger families. But in the front of that is going to be a village component. And that's really the mixed use component that I think is a national trend and is important to see here in Cincinnati.
If folks interested in learning more about Great Traditions, mm-hmm. what some of the housing looks like, can they go to your website and check that out?
Certainly. They can go to either greattraditionshomes.com or gtldc.com.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Jamie Humes. Jamie is a vice president at Great Traditions Land and Development Company. And Jamie, I know Great Traditions is about 35 years old. You haven't been there all that 35 years, but really your family has. How's it like to be in the second generation of a family business?
I have been in a professional capacity at Great Traditions for 10 years, but you're right. Since I was born, it's been in my life. And it's been a great transition. You know, real estate has traditionally been, it's been an interesting gender dynamic that has happened. But also being in a family business, there's a sense of passion and duty and sense of loyalty that I would be hard-pressed to find in another business. I get the opportunity to work alongside with my dad every day. And to tell you the truth, it's wonderful. A lot of people always ask me, do you enjoy working with your father? What is that like? And to be quite honest, I do. He is not only one of my best friends, he's become a business mentor.
Clearly, I mean, that has to be such a wonderful thing for you to be able to work with your parents and see them at a different level.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny because, you know, one of the traditional challenges with a family business is to blur the line mm-hmm. between the parental and the business relationship. So that's not to say that there aren't moments when I get maybe a little bit of dad in the corner office giving me dating advice, which is not right to do in the middle of the business day. I think the satisfaction that you get of working alongside with someone who's had so much experience and has your best interests and your professional development in mind, you know, it's a great environment to learn, and there's a level of satisfaction that remains.
Do you have the differing opinions about how the business runs?
Well, I think it's complementary because I obviously come from a different generation, and so we're able to blend those perspectives mm-hmm. very well. I think that I would like to think that he believes I give more of a balanced perspective mm-hmm. in giving a framework for how the younger generation is looking at their housing needs. But it's complementary. It's not opposite. It works well together.
What seems like as a land developer, you really have to be out front because you've got to be developing projects now that people are going to be buying 5 to 10 years from now in some cases. So I would think having a younger generation's perspective would be very valuable.
You have to have a lot of vision in the business, by definition, development. And a lot of people question, how can you be in the development business? Because it is calculated, measured, futuring. That's not quite a word, but there's a futurist perspective to this. So I think it does help him to have a younger perspective when he has not been so exposed to what's happening in the generations.
It's just got to be so fun working in that environment. But you are a female. You said gender difference. How is that for you?
You know, it actually, it's there. It's definitely there. But I think that it can be used to your advantage as well. You add the female component in addition to being the daughter of a president of the company. So that's a different mix. So that comes with a set of challenges, but it also comes with a set of benefits. I think because of the creative nature of the business and that we're all working for the same goal, which is to build great communities and fabulous homes, the divisions of those differences actually they become
positive.
Yeah, they really do. If that makes any sense.
It really does make a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. And Jamie, thank you so much for being our guest. And if folks would like more information about Great Traditions, what's your website?
It is gtldc.com or also greattraditionshomes.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.